Accessibility Craft Podcast, where we explore the art of creating accessible websites while trying out interesting craft beverages. This podcast is brought to you by the team at Equalize Digital, a WordPress accessibility company and the proud creators of the Accessibility Checker plugin. And now, on to the show.
Annalise is a passionate digital accessibility expert at Accessibility Desk, which has a Dutch name that I'm going to allow her to pronounce in just a few minutes. She is located in the Netherlands. Her journey with accessibility started roughly 8 years ago, and since then the topic has become a growing subject in her work and life. Annalise developed courses and workshops to educate different target audiences and make them understand how they can help. As a new business manager, she's also the co-leader of the European Accessibility Alliance. I had the opportunity to meet Annalise at WordCamp Europe this year, where she was a speaker and gave a phenomenal talk about accessibility there. And I was so thrilled that she was willing to come and speak with us here today. So welcome, Annalise.
Thank you. Wow, this is such a fantastic introduction. I am going to try and pull up my screen and thank you, and also connecting a few cables to my computer because one of my coworkers was so great to I'm sorry.
We're all good. You should be able to share. I am going to go away, but for everyone, there is a Q&A module that is down in the bottom of the screen. And after Annalise is done, we will do questions and answers. So please do put your questions in there.
I'm sorry. I'm fidgeting a little bit because of technique. Yeah, this should work. And I'm going to present. Correct. Now you can see my screen.
Yes.
Cool. I have a lot of other things in my screen, but that's okay. Well, welcome everyone. And I was so happy to be here. Like Amber said, we met this year. Wow. It feels like such a long time ago. It's only a few months at WordCamp Europe. And 3 weeks from that point, the European Accessibility Act came into effect. And that was a point where I thought, well, maybe we should share a lot more information about this. So we've been doing that for, a few once now, and we got a lot of resistance basically from clients, and I thought, maybe this is a topic that a lot of people could use some insights on how we target that. That's this presentation. So a little bit more about me. I am a digital accessibility expert at the Accessibility Desk. And in Dutch, it's called Digitaal Toegankelijk. And, that's difficult to pronounce. So call it Accessibility Desk. And we also have a website that's accessibilitydesk.com. But the Dutch one is more actual, basically. My first encounter with WordPress was in 2009, and I had my first talk at WordCamp in the Netherlands in 2010, and back then it was just a very small WordCamp and super cute, and I had a talk about WordPress for beginners. That was fun. And I studied ICT, and that was the moment I really noticed that IT and websites and everything around it is just not understandable, let alone accessible to people. And that was in 2009, so it's been a few years. But I made a switch to marketing, and I'm also very interested in psychology, and all that comes together in my current job. I also love cats. I have two of them, and I love me some board games and dancing and tennis, and you can find me on LinkedIn if you want to Yeah, if you want to connect with me, and I also share some insights there occasionally. And fun fact, I recently started working on the WordPress accessibility docs with Rian Rietveld and Joe Dolson, and well, Amber is involved also. And I will also do a workshop during WordCamp the Netherlands this year in the at the end of November. So if you're there, I hope you will join me, because I will try and teach everyone how to do quick scans yourself. Today's topics, well, we are going to look at how you can deal with client resistance when you say, well, you should do something with accessibility, or I want to build you an accessible website. Well, client needs to say yes, obviously. I will give you some arguments that you maybe can use. Depends on your situation, obviously, and I will show you a little bit of how we do that here and how to make a business case. And I'm putting it like that because it's very it was very difficult to find business cases, and I will show you that later. Well, so dealing with client resistance, what I get back from colleagues, what I've noticed in, well, a lot of my work with clients, even in the past when I was still in marketing, at some point it can feel like it doesn't even matter how hard you try, everything results in a no or more resistance or just maybe even ghosting some clients or potential clients, basically, to just like, rat, I don't want to deal with you anymore. And well, that's a shame, because we all know that accessibility is very important. So there are a few types of resistance, and I want to share those with you, because there's logical / rational resistance, and there's psychological and emotional resistance, and sociological / political resistance. And I will show you what all of those are later, but yeah, so logical and rational resistance has a few displays, basically. I don't know if that's the right word. And first one, and you might encounter this one the most, is a disagreement with facts, because that's what we all want to do. We have a tendency to throw facts at people. Like, there's 32% in the Netherlands that have a mild or severe disability. And well, all of the facts, like what kinds of disabilities those are, and you could throw every fact at them there is, but they still might not agree. And I mean, it's becoming more and more difficult lately to do that, because they will not believe it's that high, or they will not believe that their own customers may have a disability, or they will find arguments, and so you will end up in a continuing argument with them. The other one is effort and cost. So that's one of the most pressing points of resistance, because they will immediately ask you, how much is this going to cost, and how much effort do I need to put into it to, for example, keep it accessible after you delivered me an accessible website. So the belief that the time and effort or economic costs to make the change are too high, even in light of clear benefits, is what going to get you a no. And when you start the conversation talking about money, that's usually not a good way to go, because you cannot discuss money with them. You cannot look in their wallet and say, well, for you, it's easy to pay up this money. Or if you have like 200 employees, of course they can put in the effort. That's may sound logical to you, but for them it isn't. Another one is about the feasibility. I mean, you're the one that knows how much effort needs to be put in. You know timelines roughly. You know it might not be that difficult to make a website accessible, or to keep it accessible, or to do an audit, or whatever you want to sell them. And they're just going to question, yeah, but for us it's different, or this or that person needs to be available and he isn't, and or they aren't. And well, the practicality of making everything accessible, like why do we need to do this because no one's going to use it, or they may have a lot of ideas about how feasible it is to have an accessible website or app or any other platform basically. And another one that's within the logical and rational resistance realm is a lack of clarity, because they may have received a lot of unclear communication about the purpose of accessible websites, or the benefits, or how it will work in the future. And that's not just up to you, because they can get communications from basically everyone. I have seen emails from, well, hosting parties and or hosting providers and other parties that just make a bunch of stuff up about accessibility, and it creates a lot of and clarity basically. And well, who are they going to believe in this case? So you have to step it up there and realize that not only you but others too may provide unclear communication. So things that don't seem to be logical or rational result in confusion. So all of these things together result in confused client, and they're just like, nah, not gonna do it. So the second type of resistance is the psychological or emotional resistance. So, and the first one that you can categorize there is the fear of the unknown. And they may never admit to this. But your client, or maybe their employees or colleagues, may fear the uncertainty that comes with a change in the way of work, because they realize that if you want an accessible website or app or platform or whatever, they need to change their way of work. And that's probably what you're going to tell them as well, because they need to think about how they are going to write their articles. If they have like a knowledge base, for example, or how they're going to build their pages, they might need training, they might need whatever, and they just don't know what that's going to look like in the future. And they may also not know how much time it's going to take to get there, or if you say it's going to cost you a certain amount of money, maybe that's not true and it will go, well, up and up until they think, wow, this is a lot. So second one there is, it may be a threat to ego and security. And that's also one they will never admit, obviously, but you can sometimes sense it in their response to your proposals. Because they have a certain role within their organization, they have colleagues that have a specific role within the organization, and they may need to change that. They may need to step it up. They maybe need to do more work or different work. And well, a lot of people get a lot of value from the work that they do. And if they need to change it, they're going to feel emotional about it.
This episode of Accessibility Craft is sponsored by Equalized Digital Accessibility Checker, the WordPress plugin that helps you find accessibility problems before you hit publish. Thousands of businesses, nonprofits, universities, and government agencies around the world trust Accessibility Checker to help their teams find, fix, and prevent accessibility problems on an ongoing basis. New to accessibility? Equalized Digital Accessibility Checker is here to teach you every step of the way. Whether you're a content creator or a developer, our detailed documentation guides you through fixing accessibility issues. Never lose track of accessibility again with real-time scans each time you save, powerful reports inside the WordPress dashboard, and a front-end view to help you track down hard-to-find issues. Scan unlimited posts and pages with Accessibility Checker free. Upgrade to Accessibility Checker Pro to scan your website in bulk, whether it has 10 pages or 10,000. Download Accessibility Checker today at equalizeddigital.com/accessibility-checker. Use coupon code accessibilitycraft to save 10% on any plan.
And some people, maybe the people that they are trying to convince, maybe there won't even be a job for them later, or the expectancy for them changes a lot. So yeah, that's going to be difficult for a few people. And they may also have an internal issue. I mean, it could go your way as well, and that's mistrust. So a lack of trust, maybe in their own management or in their organizational leadership, it makes people skeptical. So if they already know that their manager, for example, needs to sign off on a proposal you make to make the website accessible, and they know, well, that's just not going to happen because it's a very untrustworthy person, or, well, they said yes before, but, well, it's not what they said to another colleague or whatever. So, yeah, they may seem enthusiastic at first. So maybe these are the clients where you got a yes from at first. So, yeah, sure, you should make our website accessible. But and then later on when you check, like, okay, but can I make a proposal for you? Then they're like, not sure, and I need to talk to someone. And they might become vague and back out even. And then there's also a sort of catch-all category within there, and that's just an overall emotional response. So you will have people saying, so your client maybe, or a potential client saying, well, I tried to talk about accessibility within our organization, and they just have very strong reactions to this subject, so maybe we should let it go for now and maybe get back to it later, and we need some time to smooth things out internally. And that's when you know, okay, so we got work to do here. Because when people feel this strong about a fairly simple proposal, then there's something else going on too. And yeah, that's difficult to deal with. And so not knowing enough leads to strong feelings of uncertainty. And yeah, then there's a third category, and that's a difficult one to grasp. At least that's also the one you have least control over, I think. And that's the sociological/political resistance. And it's similar to the threat of ego, but impact on status or power, it's mostly triggered by external factors. So it's not their own emotions that triggered this. I mean, they might have a vision of themselves on how they see themselves in work, but they also have people around them that view them a certain way. And so this resistance that's on this level that impacts their status is about how others view them. And it could happen in a lot of corporate organizations. I've seen that with some larger clients where, people are basically the only person saying, like, accessibility is important. We should do more with that. And people might start looking at them like, what's this nonsense? What are you talking about? Accessibility is not important at all. And why should we invest in that? So they're questioning, and why are you the one to tell us that? So they are going to question their status, like, who are you? And obviously that's not great. So you need to be a strong person to be able to deal with that. Another one, and that's one I see often, is that they want to protect routines and teams. So if you're speaking to someone, a potential client or a client, and he's a manager of a team, maybe multiple teams even, there might be some resistance because changing a way of work and working in an accessible way it changes how they operate on a daily basis. It changes the subjects they need to talk about, and it has a lot of impact. So, and maybe they already changed recently. Maybe there's something happened in the organization, and maybe it just calmed down. They know where they're at, and now this is going to change as well. So they might be a little hesitant to do that again. And I think it's valid, but you need to be aware that that could be going on as well. And then there's another one that comes to our tables very often, and that's the lack of buy-in. So all, again, sometimes a client comes across very enthusiastic, like you have almost signed them. They're almost like, yeah, this is just, it's just an autograph away from happening. But then all of a sudden they're like, no, we don't have the management buy-in. I mean, I obviously talked to the wrong person. And then, well, the manager of the manager came around and he's like, nope, it's not going to happen. We don't have the budget, or we don't have the time, or not priority, or a number of reasons. But anyway, they might have trouble gaining internal support and buy-in from key stakeholders, because that's what they are. Maybe even the IT department who manages the website or platform, and they're like, nope, we're going to be busy in the next 6 months because of another large project. So depending on the size of the potential client, it's happening a lot. And then there's one I sort of already touched a little bit, and that's cultural challenges. So there may be a misalignment with the existing organizational culture. So if you don't have a very inclusive culture already, and diversity and equality is not on the radar, and, well, the person you're talking to is basically the only person standing up for what's right, then you have some cultural challenges to tackle. Because if it's not in the DNA of the organization, well, you can make a website fully accessible, but within a few months, that's undone, basically. And you have to make sure that at least a large part of the organization is buying in on this. So, and there's another cultural aspect, because when you're working with international clients, there may be a broader issue, and that could be in the communication department. Maybe they just don't understand what you're saying properly, or it could be all kinds of things. It could be that where you're from in general, it's not important to be inclusive. And, well, we all know what's going on in some places, that just using the word inclusion may not be very smart at this point. And let's be fair, accessibility is part of that. So it may be difficult to get there with a client or a person within an organization that sort of wants to do it, but doesn't have the support on that, in that area. So it this type of blowback, so this internal blowback where they're the person at fault, basically, in their eyes, this type of blowback shakes your client's firm ground. So, and with clients, again, I use that as a sort of term to define the person you're talking to. So, and it could be an existing client, could be a new one. You gotta help them change. So, low-key, you're becoming their change agent. And obviously, you cannot do that by getting in their face with, oh my God, I am going to help you, and I'm going to do everything I can. You can do that more subtle. And there's a lot of change models, because we're talking change management here. And I think a lot of consultants use this. They may not know they're using it, but they are. And when you go through all of these models, what do they mean and how do they work? if you are in consultancy or have been for a long time, you may recognize them, or at least some steps within them. And if you're in marketing or have been in marketing like I have, there's a lot of steps in here that that are very familiar. And even if you don't use the model as is, so a few of them are listed here. That's Lewin's 3-stage model of change, McKinsey's 7S model, the Nudge Theory, the ADKAR, ADKAR change management model, Kueller-Ross change curve, Bridges transition model, Satir, S-A-T-I-R change model, Cotter's theory, and Maurer 3 levels of resistance and change. And the last one, the Maurer 3 levels of resistance, is what I just explained, basically. And I'm going to dive into that a little bit deeper, because that helps, actually. So Maurer, the first level of resistance is basically around, I don't get it. I don't understand the purpose of accessibility and how to do it anyway. And that's where the logical, rational resistance is. And the second level is, I don't like it. It's just going to be tons of work. I need to change a lot and it takes forever. So that's about the psychological or emotional resistance, is what they believe or what they feel. And the last level is, I don't like you. I don't trust you. You're as commercial as everyone, or any other thing that they can just have against you as a person, or at least they portray it as something that they have against you. And that might not be specifically the case, but some people are like that. Like, I don't like you. And that's the sociological and political resistance that's in that area. Knowing this, you can turn resistance into actual support, and you have your creativity at your disposal. You have, well, maybe colleagues, you have others that are with you in this. There's a lot of people listening or watching or reading about this webinar. So reach out to others to just maybe join together. Like, oof, I have this very difficult potential client or client already. This is the case. Can you maybe help me to find out what's the real problem and maybe come up with a plan together? Or if you are an agency, maybe partner up with experts and see where you can go from there. Share some experiences or go to your client together, like, hey, we have new ideas for you. So in level one, so the I don't get it, that's the one that most people are most comfortable with. And that's the make your case part. So you need to explain to your client or maybe their whole organization, or at least to their stakeholders, make sure that they know why accessibility is needed and put the why before the how. So don't start with, we're going to make your website accessible. No. First, tell them this is important. And what we usually do is just start at the inclusion exclusion part. Who are you excluding right this time? And could you do that differently? And why is it important? And not just because 32% of people in the Netherlands are having a mild or severe disability. No, it's important because they cannot do the things they need to do on a daily basis. They cannot do what the government asks them to do, or they cannot shop online like everyone else can, or they cannot find the same information as everyone else. And that's important. So the second thing you need to consider is your language. Your client or potential client is not an accessibility specialist. So use a language they can understand. Be aware that it's very easy to use language that they don't understand, because you've been in this for years. You know what you're talking about. And So be aware of your own bias, basically. And some things that are logical to you may be lost on them. And do it in multiple ways, because people take in information in different ways. Some may benefit from hearing information, some like to see it, like in animations or in videos or anything else, and some of them learn from conversations. And you can bring variety into your communication channels, and you can even combine all of them. So for level two, the I don't like it, the emotional part, you're basically going to remove fear, but not only that, you're also going to increase excitement, because if the facts don't already excite them, you can, well, tell them what's in it for them. People need to believe that making services or products accessible serves them in some way. Them personally, maybe, but mostly the organization they work for. So try and figure out if you have something to share on that level, where it's beneficial to them as a business or as a person or both. Engage, and I think that's a difficult one, at least I feel so, because people tend to support the things they helped building. So give them the opportunity to change. If you have a very strong advocate, like the client needs to convince their stakeholders and they're very willing to participate in anything, then you should work on a plan together and just give them the opportunity to just work things out and maybe even go a bit further than that and just see if they're able to get colleagues or stakeholders to also engage in the process. So maybe even filling out a questionnaire or letting them fill out a questionnaire is maybe enough, but maybe you have some more creative ideas, because in this department, I'm not very creative, but maybe you are. And there's a thing, be honest. Also about downside, because obviously their fear is not non-existent. And it's not invalid. They have fears because there might be some truth in it. And so also be honest if you say, like, yeah, it is going to take a lot of time at first. And then talk about how you could solve it and how, well, they could take control of that. When talking about accessibility, there's going to be a lot of rumors, and it may be about the timelines, there may be rumors about how they feel about you as an agency or a developer, or just, well, tackle it, be honest. And if you don't know, if you do not have an answer to their questions, just say so, like, I don't know this either, because we are at the beginning of this process, so we need to figure this out together. But as soon as I do know, I will tell you, and then obviously do follow through. That's a very important part. And there's a level three, because level three was about, I don't like you. I have something against you that, and you need to tackle that very quickly as soon as you notice that this is about your relationship. And maybe it's not specifically the relationship between you and your client, but it could also be that the client's relationship with their stakeholders or with their own organization is at stake here. And so one thing that you can do is take the blame. If it's damaged, if the relationship is damaged, take the blame, take responsibility, say, okay, I've been unclear, I've been lacking somewhere, and mention that specifically, and also mention what are you going to do to make it better. And I think that's very important if you feel like this relationship with your clients is a bit damaged. It may feel awkward, or it may feel like your pride is going to take a hit. So Because maybe you feel like you're not at fault here, because I mean, people can be difficult to deal with. But do it anyway, because it makes things better. And this is not about your pride. And this is about making things better for everyone. And this is about more than just you. Like I said in the previous level, commit. So not only say you're being honest, or well, just don't be honest, but also be trustworthy and demonstrate it. Prove that you are actually in this, and that you're not going to back out if things become difficult, and just follow through on your actions. And the final thing within this step is also take note of what the resisting people are saying. If it's your client, just take note and say like, okay, I think I heard you, and I think your opinion is valid. And even if you are wrong, admit that. And just consider their ideas, or at least say that you're considering their ideas. I will look into it. I will ask a colleague about this, or whatever. Just say that, yeah, I heard you, and I'm going to do something with this. And even if the answer is no later on, like they ask a question and they assume you can do it, it's like maybe later on it's no, but at least let them know you're hearing them. And within all this, so I make it sound easy, I guess. Maybe even if it's difficult, you have like a thing you can use, and that's your influence. And I'm mentioning this as another approach, but basically in all of this, you can use influence. And one way to do that is there's this model, and it's based on some research from, I think, Harvard or Yale. There's this, it's from an agency called Bureau Zuidema, it's in Dutch, and it's very interesting because they talk about the energy you do things with. So if you're pushing, you're doing different things than when you're pulling, so make people come to you basically. And so the styles you can use, there are four of them. So you can use persuasion, you can use asserting, you can use bridging, and attracting. And when you are persuading people, you can be proposing, and you can reason. And again, like I said, reasoning is one thing that I think most people feel most comfortable with, but reasoning is not going to get you everywhere you want to go. And it's very pushing in energy. It's like, I want to win this discussion. I want to be right. And the same for proposing. Can we do this? Can we do that? Can't you agree with this? It's very trying to persuade someone. And with asserting, that's, well, it is basically in a word, you're asserting your point of view into their point of view, basically. So, and there you can really add some pressure. Could be anything else, could be peer pressure. You can say like, oh, everyone else is doing it, so you should too. As if you are a manager, you use stating a lot, I want you to do this or that, or I need you to do this by tomorrow, that's stating. And there's also where you state expectations, like I expect you to do this, or yeah. And that's not always the best energy if someone's already in resistance. And so what you want to do is turn the energy around, and that's pulling them in. So you're going to start bridging. So that's where you start listening. You just have conversations and you're listening to their fears, you're listening to their objections, you're doing something with it. And that's also where involving them is. That's part of that too. And disclosing too, that's the honesty part. Like, you're disclosing you're working on something new and you want to try something and you want to involve them in the experiment, or so there's a lot that you can use there. And then there's attracting, and that's basically inspirational. So what you're doing there is finding common ground, like what can we agree on and what are the things that we find important, all of us, like not just us as an agency or a developer, or but also what do you find important, and just go all the way there. Like, even the tiniest thing could be a common ground. And what you're also doing there is sharing your vision. So it goes beyond, again, the how to get there or the, well, you should do it because all of those things, because then you revert back to persuading. No, your vision is a world where everyone can do the things they want to do on a daily basis without getting tired, or more tired, not more tired than usual. And so share with them what you see. And so, yeah, there's a lot of things you can find in influence models like this, or change management models like this. Yeah, so to continue, or actually to sum this part up, so if you're dealing with client resistance, you need to really find out what the real problem is, because they can say one thing, but it might be a totally different problem than what you're actually looking at. Make a plan to tackle that, if really worth it, because you could have just like a potential client or client where it's just like, nah, it's not worth the energy. It's going to make me feel bad about myself, or it's just going to hurt our organization if this client looks at this differently because of this. So if it will really hurt the relationship, for example, then just don't. And there's hopefully more fish in the sea, as they say. So within that plan, you can just use everything I just shared to figure out, okay, how am I going to do this? And it might take some time. Be aware of that. This is not just a 1 week plan. This may take some time. And if the problem is that your client needs to convince their own stakeholders, help them, because you have all this information. You are the expert here. So don't let them go and figure it out. And you'd be like, well, I'll hear from you when I'll hear from you. Like, could take some time. No, just be there and say like, okay, I'm going to help you no matter what. I don't need money for this. Obviously, you have to believe that they eventually will get to work with you. And just use the change management or influence models to help you with this. And what also helps a lot is, well, put your case into ChatGPT and ask them, how would you solve this using this management model or whatever model? And it is surprisingly good with this. I was surprised about that too. So you have figured this one out, and then what arguments can you use as a vehicle for your change efforts? Because this still may sound a little bit vague, and there's a lot of arguments, I think, but Hannon also mentioned a few of these arguments, so forgive me if you've already seen this. So all the reasons, I'm going to go through them quickly because I will stop by them later. A better experience for all users, higher revenue, saving costs, an influence on SEO, and higher reach. Better findability in AI or deep search, robust and sustainable products, comply with legislation, and one we all want, crush the competition. And maybe you could think of a few more reasons, but these are the ones that I used most in different situations. And so the first one, a better experience for all users, if you need an example for that, there's one that's pretty old, and that's the curb cut effect. And this is the effect that, well, it happened like, I think, 40 years ago now, like late 80s, maybe early 80s, I'm not exactly sure. But back then, there were no curb cuts. So everyone in a wheelchair or, well, carrying something else on wheels or a bike on hand or a luggage or whatever, they had to do very difficult things to get onto the side steps. And, well, creating, well, dangerous situations, obviously. So I think it was an Oxford professor, I'm not very sure, but you can read all of it on Sketchplanations or just Google the curb cut effect. There's plenty of websites that explain how it came to be, but anyway, it was invented for wheelchairs, and now all of the side steps have points where it's equal to the to the streets, basically, so you do not have to you don't have to be in a dangerous situation to get yourself on and off the streets. So it's lowered. It was designed based on specific needs for people with disabilities. But it is appreciated by just more than the target group, because people with a with luggage or whatever, or trolleys or anything on wheels, they also benefit from this. And that's the same with having an accessible website. It's not just for the 33% or 25% or whatever your percentage is in your country. It's also for people who may not have a specific disability, but do have difficulties with some things. And I think you also need to consider that when you're getting older, you won't be specifically disabled, but you will have a problem with your fingers being, rheumatic, for example. I mean, that's difficult to explain, but maybe they start shaking a lot more, or your vision gets a little bit worse. And so if a website is accessible, it's also beneficial for those people. And any person can get a disability at every time of the day. I mean, I could walk out of here and just stumble and fall, break my arm, and then, well, not be able to use my mouse for weeks. So it benefits me in the end as well. And you just don't know what's going to happen to you. Maybe you get a brain bleed. It's not to sound daunting or anything, but it's good to realize that if you're healthy right now and don't have a disability right now, it just could happen to you as well. We just don't like to think about that. The second benefit or reason why you should make your website accessible is higher revenue, because you create loyal customers when they find your website accessible. Because there's been this research, and I have a chart on my slides of that research. And there was a question in there, and it was asked to people with access needs, basically. And it said, would you spend more online if websites were more accessible? And they did that research. I think it was the Click Away Pound survey. In 2016, roughly 80% of those people said, yes, I would spend more online. And in 2019, it was even a little bit higher. It was almost nearing 90. And so there was only a small percentage that said, nah, it doesn't make a difference for me. So for people with access needs, it makes a lot of difference if they discover like websites are more accessible. They have money to spend. I think it's in that same survey, and there's lots of surveys that mention the average yearly spend of people with access needs. And well, potentially they could spend a lot more if websites were accessible. That's basically the gist of it. And once they do, they also will come back and they will also tell their friends and family, like, wow, this website is really great. So yeah. And again, because it works for other people too, they also might find it easier to spend their money on your website. Another one is saving costs. So it may sound weird because, well, you're first asking for money to make a website accessible. They have to put in all that work. So how's that saving costs? Well, there's another research. I think it was Forrester and Microsoft. And they researched within a few organizations that had accessibility, like in all of their services. And they said, like, well, working accessible and having a website that's easy to use, specifically for people who want to contact us and if they need customer service for anything, they now or before called us. Well, every call costs money, but they now can self-serve on the web. They can fill out a form that's accessible. They can, well, anything else. So, and so that it saves a lot of money in customer service calls. And that's something that a Dutch, Dutch research also found as well in, I think, some web shops. Well, basically, the number is pretty high, like 15% fewer customer service inquiries. And so that's calls, that's chats, that's emails, because those needed to be answered by actual people. And those people spend time doing so. And most of those calls were, I cannot find something on your website. I cannot do something on your website. How does that work? How can you help me? And so if you have an accessible website, you don't have all of those problems. So they don't have to come to customer service to ask them to help them. So you can save a lot of customer service money there. And probably not the only way you can save costs, but well, that's the most important one, I guess. So yeah, I mentioned the influence on SEO, so search engine optimization, which results in a higher reach, obviously. So there's research of that. But it's for a reason that Google and Screaming Frog, for example, and Screaming Frog is a tool that a lot of SEO specialists use to crawl websites and see what's going on there. They have accessibility tabs since a few months or years, maybe in the case of Google. So you can check some basic accessibility things. I mean, it's not 100% all of it, like every automated testing, but it is an indication that Google thinks it's important. So if you are in Chrome or in Firefox and you go to the developer tools, you have Lighthouse there and you can analyze page, and it also has a bubble for accessibility there. And it is for a reason, and I will mention said research later on, but it's because some of the criteria for accessibility overlap with good websites for search engines, basically. They overlap and they work in the same way. So if you do SEO right, doesn't automatically mean that you do accessibility right. And the other way around, if you do accessibility good, it's not meaning that you will be found better in search engine, but they have overlap. And same goes for AI and ChatGPT and all of the other chats, basically, and Gemini. If you do accessibility right, because of all of the good structure, the clean code, the everything that's helpful for, assistive devices, for example, or screen readers. It also means that those tools can interpret your website better and faster as well. So the information you put in there is easier to interpret for those chats. Then there's the question if you want that, but well, nowadays a lot of companies want that. And I asked ChatGPT actually how they look at websites. So I asked them, can you explain in detail how you read websites, how having a fully accessible website helps you, ChatGPT, and how it compares to how a search engine like Google works? Do you also render a website? And it's pretty detailed about how it looks at websites. So the response I get is on slides, but it basically said, well, how I read a website, I do not render a website like a browser, but what I can process is the raw HTML structure or the text content you provide. And it pays attention to things like headings and text and lists, alt text, area labels and roles, metadata and structured data. And it also said JavaScript generated content is usually invisible to me unless it's already included in the raw HTML or exposed through an API, which is difficult for me to understand because what is it? Is it yes or no? That's what it basically said, and you can help it by providing a clear structure and alt text and forms and buttons that are labeled correctly and logically and consistent semantics and whatever. So there's a lot of overlap with search engine optimization and accessibility there. So it's a good reason, to pay attention to accessibility. And then there's the sixth reason, robust and sustainable products. Obviously, if you know what you're doing in accessibility department, you know how to write proper code, you know how to design things accessible, and a way to make that sustainable is put it into a design system. So you don't have to think about it every time you need to do an update or you build a new website or a similar website or a new part of a website. So that's why design system exists. And one of the most mentioned design system is the one of the government of the United Kingdom, gov.uk. I think it's a very helpful one to browse through and just see what and how they do it. And since there's already a lot of examples and there's many tools that can help you set up a design system, I think if you make larger websites or have larger websites or platforms, that it's very useful to have one if you don't have one already. Reason number seven is lots of clients, organizations need to comply with legislation. If it's not the ADA or Section 508, it's the European Accessibility Act. It's pretty new, but all of them will cost you money if you lose a lawsuit or if you get fined by the supervisory authorities, especially here in the Netherlands, but many other countries in the EU already have this in place. Even before the European Accessibility Act became law, some countries already had laws regarding accessibility, for example, Spain. So I found this article, and it's screenshotted in the slides, of a Spanish website, news website, that mentioned that Vueling, the airline, basically national airline of Spain, received a pretty big fine of 90,000 euros because they did not have an accessible website. And specifically, their terms and conditions were not accessible enough. And well, if you're buying airline tickets, I think terms and conditions are pretty important. That's not the only one. I mean, there's also a French supermarket chain that's been warned that they need to make their websites accessible before the 1st of September. So, and if they didn't do it, they would also go to court for it. And they is organizations that basically empower people with disabilities. And so those organizations were like, yeah, well, supermarket is a very important thing for people with disabilities, so go fix. So I'm very curious. I tried to find if they already went to court for this. I don't think so, but I think they are still, they're working on it. So yeah, it's very interesting that that would be the actual first case for within the European accessibility law that would go to court for it. Reason number eight is crush the competition. If your competition is not already making their websites accessible, then you definitely should, because well, it helps, like all the other reasons, obviously, well, make you better than the competition. If they don't take these reasons seriously, then you have a very big opportunity. And there's research from Web, I'm not sure if I pronounce it properly, but obviously they have accessibility tools as well, and they do research every year on the WebAIM 1 million. It's pretty automated, but and they also categorize it in types of businesses. So there's been a few categories that were better this year than over last year, but the most strange one was that shopping. So websites in the shopping category, like Amazon, were down like a lot. They 40% difference. So they were becoming worse, and that's strange because the attention for making your website accessible was becoming very high, and now it's just like, oh no, there's some categories that don't bother, and also travel also gone down, gambling and casinos too, but I'm not sure if I mind that much. So there's a lot of categories that still have a lot of opportunity, that if you do it better in that category, then you will be better than your competition. So it's good for everything. And so one does not simply convince a client. This is a meme from, I think, Lord of the Rings, with this guy. One does not simply. I don't know his name anymore. I mean, it's been a while since I watched Lord of the Rings, but if you've seen the meme, you know it. So this is how we do it. So I mentioned a lot of things, and well, I kind of mentioned like, okay, so this is cool, but do you do all this for one potential client? So yeah, sometimes we do. We take a client by the hand and do whatever they need to get convinced. And this is just for high potential clients, obviously. I mean, if they just want a quick scan, that's fine too. But clients where we feel like, okay, you should definitely have an accessible website. We take a lot of effort to do all that, because we believe very much that even one by one, we're making the world a little bit better. But there's a lot of things that you can do that is not on a one-on-one basis. You can use that as a sort of catch-all thing. And obviously, one of the things is sharing information through webinars. But how we do it is we have review videos. So we have an experience expert. And she's, well, nearly blind. And she reviews website for us. So we can do that for clients we want to reel in really slowly. So we did that for the Dutch Railways, for example. They were like, whoa, this is super bad. So maybe we should talk. So that's really cool to do. So she just takes a website and we show it in the video, and she talks us through it, how she uses it with a screen reader. And it's a pretty easy format to just tape and put online and tag the company in it. The other thing we do is webinars just for potential clients. So we talk to a lot of people every month in our sales pipeline, basically. So it comes down to that. And we organize webinars specifically for them because they ask us a lot of questions all the time. And they're like, how does this work? And what if we do this? Then what happens? So we take those questions and we say, okay, next month we'll organize a webinar. We'll answer your questions. Okay. Just join us. And we do that for a bunch of them at the same time. Obviously, blog posts. So we take those questions there as well, because it might help other people too. And you can spread the word even further, specifically if you post them on the socials too. We have a knowledge base, which we also update regularly with new questions or with new insights. We do have personal calls if we feel like, whoa, this is going the wrong way, or this is just, this is not the response I was expecting. We'll just call them, sometimes with a consultant present or an auditor present, because they have specific knowledge that maybe could help this client. We share white papers. So we did a white paper together with a law firm because they knew more about the European Accessibility Act and what that meant in legal terms, because we're not a legal firm. So we cannot advise clients about what they should do from a legal point of view, but we do get a lot of those questions. So we teamed up with them and said, like, well, this is where you should look at in terms of law and legal. And then there's events, and obviously on events you can also take a lot of people at the same time and just share what's important for those group of people. And I mean, I've been on an event with cybersecurity specialists, and well, cybersecurity is not even remotely my expertise, but accessibility for cybersecurity is something I could talk about. So it's just also fun to think about ways that you can talk about accessibility that's not your usual jam, basically. So after all that, and so you talk to your communications department if you have one, or to your marketing department, or maybe you teamed up with a freelance marketing person, and you did all that, you're going to put in all this effort. So at some point your client will still be hesitant, because they will put this off like forever. And so they will still say, but I still want to know what we gain from putting all this effort in. Do you have numbers, cases, proof? Specifically that last one. Do you have proof that this will work? You're like, well, it's obvious. For them, it isn't. So, unfortunately, there's not a lot of research that actually supports this. There's lots of articles that mention the same old research, and it's not been updated. I mean, the W3C has a page with business cases that's not been updated since forever. So we're talking about early 2000s here. And well, the world has changed a lot since. And so there's some more recent research, but it's not all that fantastic. So I'm going to mention the research and the things that I do have. So hopefully it's something useful. But if you do find research that actually supports all what I just said with hard numbers, then please share it with the whole community, because we're all looking for it. So I mentioned the ClickAway Pound survey earlier, and you can find it on clickawaypound.com. So the basic numbers that you can find in there is, it's UK based, obviously, because Pound. But if you would look up the numbers for the US or any country, because it's just general numbers, you can make your own case based off of this. So 7.15 million disabled internet users in the UK have access needs. So it basically means that not everybody who's disabled has specific access needs. Some are disabled and can perfectly use a computer. They don't need anything else. So, but there's still a large amount of people that do have access needs. And the online spending power of people with access needs in the UK was at that time in 2019, 24.8 billion. So that's a lot. The percentage of disabled people with access needs who say they click away from a website with barriers is 69%. Was back then. I think by now it might be even higher, because there's so much online that you can, I mean, even I do that a lot. Like, this is not working for me, I go back to Google, find something else. Percentage of users with access needs who limit their shopping to sites they know are barrier-free are 83%. That's the number I said earlier. And so that is super, super high. So if your website is barrier-free, you're going to notice it. I'm pretty sure of it. But no one shares these numbers for reasons I do not understand. So I hope that if someone's listening and they are willing to provide some numbers after they made parts or whole parts of the website accessible, please share. It would be so fantastic. And there's one survey I found to support that if you do accessibility right, you're also better in search engines. And that's the research, why accessibility matters more than ever for SEO performance. It's research that's done by SEMrush and accessibilitychecker.org. And what they saw was accessibility sites see 23% more visitors, and more accessible sites rank for 27 more terms. Now, I don't specifically believe in ranking for terms anymore because Google works so differently these days, but still, for as far as you can still rank and still get clicks for it, it's a pretty steep number because 27% is a lot. I mean, I've been in SEO for over 10 years, maybe longer. These are fantastic numbers. So if you see 23% more visitors from your organic search, that's huge. That's just that. I mean, if you plot that on your conversion rates, then you would definitely see higher revenue in there as well. If your website is about revenue, so. Yeah, the whole, if you Google it, why accessibility matters more than ever for SEO performance, you should find it. But I also have a very ugly short URL. I'm going through it. It's urlr.me/ capital N, capital H, and then lowercase bzs5. I think that it will be in the transcript later. So, well, seeing that there's not a lot of business cases out there, and trust me, I know Google and I can Google. I didn't find any, and I asked around. There's not a lot out there. So wouldn't it be great to set up your own business case? And I mean, we're just starting to do that with our own clients. So unfortunately, I don't still have anything concrete there. But if I have in the future, I will definitely share it on all channels. So how do you set that up? go to your client's analytics tool if you already have access, and if not, ask them for access or data, because you can ask them this for a start. Like, they want to do this as well, because they want to convince their shareholders this is going to be something. So at least have a benchmark there. And so what you want to do is set a baseline. So, and this is only an example. You can probably think of more data that's relevant here. So the first thing you can think of is organic search traffic on the homepage. Take an average in the past few months, like, and see if that's a stable number. And also the same for conversion rates. So see the number of forms sent versus the bounce on it. So how many don't fill out the form but start. The number of accounts successfully registered, if that's your if that's a thing, and also how many fail to do so. Successful shopping cart processing versus the bounce rate there. So how many do have stuff in their shopping cart but never pay for it and have a successful we're lost.
And we are about at time, because we're supposed to wrap up at 11:30. So I'm wondering if you have a final thought that you want to share, and then I have maybe one or two questions we can do real quick.
Yeah, so I'm nearly done. I think I have two more slides, so I'm going to go through that quickly, if that's okay with you.
Our captioner, we have a small buffer time with our captioner, but I don't want to go too much over, because we don't run, I don't want to run extra long in these captions.
Okay, so real quick then. So I think this will be in the transcript as well. So so you can make a prognosis and just look at it like 3 months later and see if that actually worked after your client says yes. So make your own business cases and do that. It's super cool. So that's it. So you can now use the change management models to convince your clients. You have plenty of arguments and hopefully some inspiration for helpful methods and how to set up a business case for yourself. So, and if you need our help later on with doing all this, find us at at digitaaltoegankelijk.nl. And I'm sorry, that's still in Dutch. So, or go to accessibilitydesk.com and fill out the form. That's also great. So I'm now ready to take some questions. And I'm sorry this took so long.
It was a great presentation. So that's good. Do you want to stop sharing your screen for just a minute? I did put some of those links in the chat. I know we'll have them with the recap. And you had said you were going to check and see if you can share the slides with us as well, so we can include them. So I appreciate that. I will also throw in the chat here, and maybe you would be interested in it as well, assuming I can get it in. Yep, there we go. So we actually do, excuse me, we actually do have a case study of a community college, and this is a presentation from a higher ed conference that we did with that college about the results they saw from making their website accessible. And it goes into the process, because they got in trouble with the United States government. So they talk a lot about what that was like for them. But there's some results in that as well, if anyone is interested. I'm sort of curious. I really found the slide that you had where you were talking about how you attract customers. And the review videos I thought was really interesting. And I was curious, do you ever get, like, do organizations ever just get mad at you? Because I'm assuming you just post those on, like, YouTube?
Yeah, we post them on YouTube, and up until now, no one got mad. I think some organizations didn't even care. We did one a few years ago about an organization that does transport specifically for people with disabilities. So you can just fill out a form and just say, I want to go from A to B. And you can pay for that online as well. And you can say, I'm bringing a wheelchair, I'm bringing any other assistive device, and they'll just figure out how to get you from A to B. And it was totally inaccessible. It was like, it was a disaster. And well, we tried reaching out and they were like, meh. And I don't know, I think the website still didn't change a lot since then. So, but yeah, most of them are really happy that we tried it and that we are reaching out to them at some point. And they're like, oh, this is very interesting. I will send it through to the right people or whatever. And yeah, sometimes they follow up as a client and sometimes they don't. It's just like, get lost in the organization, I guess.
I mean, you know, one of the things WooCommerce told us, because we've been doing a lot of auditing for WooCommerce for the past several years, is the part of what motivated them to work with us was I opened like 50 GitHub issues related to accessibility and it got their attention because it wasn't just one or two, it was a lot. So it is interesting, you know, you have to invest time into that kind of lead generation, but it can work. I think you have to be thoughtful about what organizations you're targeting.
Yeah, I think so.
Sometimes the government ones, they won't be, because they have certain requirements on how they can, you know, they have to run RFPs and like all that stuff, so it may not work. So you have to be thoughtful about that. But I really appreciate you giving this presentation and all of the effort that you have put into it. I'm sure that people will have a lot of follow-up questions. Where is the best place for people to get in touch with you? I know you mentioned your website already, but are you active on any of the social medias?
Yeah, so on the first slide, second slide, I guess, I mentioned my LinkedIn profile. So I'm on LinkedIn under my very difficult to pronounce name, / Annelies Verhelst. And if you just add me there and maybe mention in the message that you saw my presentation here and you have a follow-up question, then I will just accept and then you can send me a DM. Or if you're only interested in my insights, then just follow me and I will, well, post occasionally.
Great. Well, thank you so much. And thank you to everyone who stuck around. If you've not done it yet, please go register for WordPress Accessibility Day. It's in less than 2 weeks. And we will also see you back here for another meetup on November 13th with Matt Millenwing.
Yes.
Bye,
exciting.
Everybody.
Bye. And thank you all.
Thanks for listening to Accessibility Craft. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe in your podcast app to get notified when future episodes release. You can find Accessibility Craft on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And if building accessibility awareness is important to you, please consider rating Accessibility Craft 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Accessibility Craft is produced by Equalize Digital and hosted by Amber Hines, Chris Hines, and Steve Jones. Steve Jones composed our theme music. Learn how we help make thousands of WordPress websites more accessible at equalizedigital.com.